And I thought that you should just suck it up and move on. And I spent a lot of days in the backseat of my car holding my then 18-year-old son's hand while my husband rushed me to the ER. Like, this became like every 3 to 4 weeks because I would start to have anxiety attacks. So it's all real, the impact that it has on us emotionally. But one of the biggest things that I think it at least helped me is recognizing that, okay, this has to be hormone based. This is not my normal MO, and making a decision. Now, what am I going to do about it? So I didn't understand why I was anxious. Part of it was probably because I was going to 18 different doctors across 4 states and blah, blah, blah. But I didn't understand where all of the anxiety was coming from. I didn't understand why. I still can't remember my kid's name, so I'm not going to even say that came back. But I couldn't understand, like, in the workplace why I was forgetting things. So I started, and people think this is oversimplification, but it's not. It's so real.
Hey, friend, and welcome back to the Driven Woman Entrepreneur Podcast self-care series. Last week, we talked all about sleep, and this week, we're going for the hormones. That's right. If you are a woman between 38 and 54, you are in the thick of it, and you are experiencing symptoms that you may not even know are related. The change of life is no small thing. And if you're an entrepreneurial woman who's trying to get past brain fog, sleepless nights, confusion, poor focus, and so much more, you need to know what's going on so you can deal with it effectively. My friend and today's guest, Stephanie Shaw, who's the host of Hello Hot Flash podcast, is here to help us unpack the hormonal confusion, understand why boundaries are the ultimate form of self-care, and how to better prepare ourselves to advocate when we seek out help from healthcare professionals. This is a fantastic conversation that I think is going to give people a whole lot of relief. So let's get right to it, shall we? We both know that a lot of women are asking, am I in burnout or is it my hormones? And that's a lot of suffering going on that you are uniquely qualified to address. So let's just start with, how do you know? Like, what are the symptoms?
Yeah. So sometimes you may not know if it's one or the other unless you are taking some tests. So you can take hormone tests, but I will tell you, a lot of times our doctors do not want to prescribe those because they always say that it's a moment in time. Yeah, it is, but we still want to know. So you may not be able to tell the difference between the two, but you can react the same. So if it's burnout, if it's perimenopause, there are some steps that we as women can take to navigate what is actually going on. And the one thing that I think is so super important is getting to the root cause, because we often think we wear stress as a badge of honor. We think we need to be superwoman, or we think we don't have any stress because that's just how life is. Mm. Once you start to uncover what is going on in your life, that's how you can get some solutions. More than likely, you'll probably be able to kind of self-determine if it's just burnout or perimenopause, and it can help you move forward. So we can talk a little bit about those steps as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I already have a question, because what I'm thinking is, and I know for a fact, because I have already been through perimenopause and menopause, mm-hmm. and it wasn't that long ago that I don't remember exactly how daunting it was at times, but I hear from a lot of women that they need to have their hormones checked, but the hormone tests that most physicians, and I'm not talking your GP, I'm talking your gynecologist.
Yes.
Even most gynecologists are not willing, or they have to be persuaded, shall we say, to prescribe a full battery of tests because the standard tests may not be accurate enough. Is that your experience as well?
Yeah, that has been my experience. So part of the work that I also do is teaching women to advocate for themselves, because I say if your gynecologist will not provide you with information on how to handle your medical condition, then you need to find another gynecologist. So giving them a little credit, you know, because they are intelligent men and women, they are not trained specifically in menopause for an extended period of time. I'm going to say 30 days. There's this mini course basically that you take on menopause. So they're basically trained to help you when you're pre-perimenopausal. That support is in there. So advocating for yourself is really important. If you're like me, so I ended up going to 18 different doctors, 2 world-renowned medical facilities. I didn't know all of the symptoms that I was having, which was close to 40, was perimenopause related, but I kept at it until I found someone who can actually support me. So yeah, you're right that they do not always prescribe to giving you tests, but that's why as women, we can not only advocate for ourselves, but start taking steps to help solve the problem so that we can at least be working toward living a better, healthier life with or without the test results.
It's certainly been my experience as being part of the healthcare system for many, many years that you generally speaking do not get what you do not ask for. And it's a shockingly small amount of training that physicians get on things that are critically important to our well-being, like nutrition.
Nutrition, yes. Thank you so much for saying
there's almost no training because physicians who are trained in Western allopathic medicine are trained to identify, diagnose and treat disease.
Right.
They are not as well trained to keep people healthy. And I'm just going to say it. I think there's an astonishing amount of gender bias as well.
We agree.
Most research is not done on women. So, and very little research has been done on perimenopause. So we don't need to go down the whole list of the 40 symptoms that you, I mean, girl, I got to tell you, I have mad respect for your determination and your need to understand. I am exactly the same way. Mm-hmm. When I have a question, it doesn't have to be about me or my well-being, but if I have a question and I realize I'm getting a superficial answer, I'm like, next. Yeah. And I will keep going and keep going and keep going. Sometimes it can become quite the rabbit hole. But in your case, like you were suffering. You were going to specialist after specialist, spending time, money, energy, effort, sacrifice, mm-hmm. Yeah. And you still weren't getting what you needed. What do people need to know about the laundry list of things that you might just think it's aging or it's stress or it's maybe I'm not exercising enough, but it's actually perimenopause? What are some of the big
symptoms and signs?
Yeah.
Yeah. So first of all, I'm going to jump back to advocacy for just a brief second. Don't just walk in saying that you're going to advocate, do the homework first. So write mm-hmm. down your list of questions. And when they see that you're serious, I've found that they're more apt to respond to you and perhaps sit down and answer your questions. So I just wanted to say that. But my laundry list included my hair fell out in the back, left-hand side. Mm-hmm. It was funny that my cousin one time said, oh, I like that little cute asymmetrical bob you have. I'm like, I don't have one. I hadn't even noticed how much it was breaking up. So hair falling out, twitching in my eyes, cold hands and feet, rapid heartbeat after I would eat something. Certain foods, just my heart would beat so fast. I'm like, I'm dying. Phantom smells is one that people aren't quite familiar with. So most people smell like gas, electricity. Some people smell body odor. I smelled gas, which too frequently at work, I call my husband. I'm like, the gas is leaking. Call the gas. He's like, this probably is in your head again. But that was before we knew that it was actually a perimenopausal symptom. So those stronger smells, but people also smell things like maple syrup. So I was on both spectrums. And while you may think that smelling maple syrup is a good thing, the intensity of that sugar smell, I can't even describe it. It's very disturbing. So that can change. You can have itching, rash, dry skin, the way that your body reacts to maybe your deodorant and certain detergents and so forth, all of that begins to change. So there's been a study that lists close to 100 perimenopausal symptoms. So it's part of this research group in Canada. Well, it's a supplement group, but they're doing some research in Canada. And as they went down the list, I'm like, oh my goodness, I had that. So understanding that all of these symptoms are related to the changes in our estrogen, progesterone, and the testosterone levels, and our cortisol levels as well. When we start to understand that those changes can actually cause different changes in our body. So just don't get paranoid about it, but be aware that some things you may think are a little off may actually be a little off. And then you can find some support at that point.
You know, as you're going down this list, and by the way, you are talking about some of the more nuanced and maybe less well-known symptoms. The ones that we mostly hear about are weight gain, even if we've never had trouble maintaining our weight, decreased sex drive, mm-hmm. being sweaty, yeah. disrupted sleep.
Yes, I had all of those. Had all of those too. Like my face was like so. I gained all weight in my breast and my face, and so I'm like, can I get some hips back here?
Yeah,
that didn't work out. Gut, breast, face. So I gained weight as well. So yeah, you're exactly right. My sleep was totally. I had a girlfriend, and like 3 o'clock in the morning, we'd be like, all right, let's just start texting each other because we were both up in the middle of the night. You like, what else are you going to do at this point? So that sleep is, again, it's all because of your hormones that are changing. But there's also, as women, we often think that we need to be everything for everyone and never take care of ourselves. I was queen of that. I like thought self-care was selfish. I talked about people behind their back in my head. I'm like, oh, they're so selfish. I did. As a matter of fact, yesterday I was sitting with a woman who didn't realize I had talked about her in the past, but she's so sweet and so healthy and so vibrant, but she had a really good self-care regimen. And I thought, well, how does she find time for that? But, you know, complete digression.
I want to know this though. Did you fess up? Did you tell her, girl, I was so judgy?
So I can now, because we have that relationship and I didn't even think to fess up. I thought about her. And being with her yesterday after I thought about recording this episode. So right before I got on with you, I'm like, oh, I was with yesterday. And I remember when that happened. So yeah, I need to fess up. But yeah, so again, so all of these symptoms do happen when we're not taking care of ourselves and they can cause additional stress on our bodies.
Well, and let's be honest, they're going to happen. They're going to be disruptive. They're going to affect you, body, mind, and brain, even if you're taking care of yourself, right? It's not like taking care of yourself means it's going to be smooth sailing as your hormones are wrecking havoc with you. But if you're taking care of yourself in the ways that you're going to share with us, you will be able to tolerate the symptoms better and you may be able to diminish them somewhat. Is that right?
You're 1,000,000% right. And we didn't even mention brain fog when you just said brain.
Well, Actually, yeah, I queued you up for that because okay. as you know, I know it was very sneaky, but hey, I almost got away with it. I was a licensed psychotherapist, as you know, for many years before transitioning into coaching. And so I realized that a lot of people, a lot of women would come for therapy in their late 30s to mid 40s, even those who had never come for therapy before. And they would generally say, all of a sudden, I feel dissatisfied with everything in my life. I think my husband is an a-hole. I want to give my kids away. I want to quit my job. I want to run away. I want to do. And so, or they didn't have the energy to think such grandiose escape fantasies. They would just say, I'm exhausted. I'm anxious. I'm depressed. I don't want to do anything for anyone. I don't even want to do for me. I just want to lie in my bed and wish the day away. And of course, many therapists would just say, oh, this woman is suffering from anxiety, depression, whatever. They would give them a diagnosis and they'd put them on meds. And it was something that you and I have talked about in the past, that a shocking percentage of women over 40 are on anti-anxiety and antidepressant medication, when to me, that's the first sign that they probably need a proper hormone workup because they may not need that medication. So let's just get right to it. What are the effects of perimenopause in particular on the brain? Because what happens to the brain is going to affect not only your well-being and your functioning, but your mental health. And brain fog is one of the biggest complaints I hear.
Yeah, so you're exactly right. That is one of the biggest impacts. We begin to forget everyday thing. And it's hurting us not only at home, but it's hurting us in the workplace. So women over 50 are leaving the workplace at a higher rate than ever. And that's who we need in the workplace, because that's where all the you know, all the nurturing and the intelligence, it's when we get to that age. But so, yes, it's affecting us with brain fog. It's affecting us with anxiety. I'd never been an anxious person. I thought that you should just suck it up and move on. And I spent a lot of days in the backseat of my car holding my then 18-year-old son's hand while my husband rushed me to the ER. Like, this became like every 3 to 4 weeks because I would start to have anxiety attacks. So it's all real, the impact that it has on us emotionally. But one of the biggest things that I think it at least helped me is recognizing that, okay, this has to be hormone based. This is not my normal MO, and making a decision. Now, what am I going to do about it? So I didn't understand why I was anxious. Part of it was probably because I was going to 18 different doctors across 4 states and blah, blah, blah. But I didn't understand where all of the anxiety was coming from. I didn't understand why. I still can't remember my kid's name, so I'm not going to even say that came back. But I couldn't understand, like, in the workplace why I was forgetting things. So I started, and people think this is oversimplification, but it's not. It's so real. I started journaling. I started writing down what my day was like and then I just didn't write it down, but the highs, the lows, I started to see a pattern. During this week of the month, I'm a little more anxious. When I'm in a scenario with this person, I'm a lot more anxious. So I was able to use that. I did my own research on myself. Yes, you can think that it's time consuming. I'll never do that. I can't make that part of my life. But when you get to that point where you are in the backseat of the car driving to the ER room, you know, with your child, you take those steps. So I encourage women to start a journal. Don't, you know, it's not 2 hours a night that you're journaling, 5 minutes per day. Do it while you're sitting, using the bathroom. Just do, find time and then go backwards and start to see where those things are and then make a decision. What are you going to do? So it was time for me to have a really big conversation with someone. That two people actually that impacted my livelihood and could have impacted my familial relationships. I had to make the decision that I was not going to live like this anymore. I had those conversations, and it's beautiful now. It wasn't like the relationships are severed or anything. I was respectful. I went in and spoke about what I needed, and they were receptive to it. That, I kid you not, within 4 or 6 weeks, all my sciatic pain that had been there for almost 2 months. And I physically at one point couldn't move my shoulders left and right. I didn't drive for 2 months, but I really should not have been driving for longer. I couldn't move my head. So those people were sitting on my neck and sitting on my behind, basically. So I was able to, by using journaling, walk through that transition and encourage other women to do the same thing. So get to the root cause.
See, there's
that was a long answer. Sorry,
Stephanie. It's all good. And I want to go back, circle back to it, and unpack it a little bit more because there's so much there. So many of the qualities and traits that you have that I love so much are that, you know, many women, when they're experiencing this much discomfort, they just don't feel like themselves at all. They really freak the F out and start feeling like they're being betrayed by their own body. They're being victimized by their own body. And none of that will actually help you figure it out. Your ability to think, okay, this is very disturbing. This is very disruptive. I don't like this, but it's happening for a reason. And you're able to like engage that critical thinking and critical problem solving part of you, because there's all kinds of ways to journal, Stephanie. A lot of people journal like, dear diary, today sucked. Yesterday was pretty shitty too. Sorry, I forgot to mention that. You know, and it's just kind of, and venting, hey, listen, I'm a big fan of venting, right?
Angry journaler is what I am.
Yeah. And, you know, I always say, you know, there are plenty of bartenders and hairstylists out there who are the great untrained therapists of the world because they listen to venting all the time. Yes. But you didn't just vent. Mm-hmm. You engaged your critical thinking and your problem solving ability and your desire to get to the root cause. Be like, why is this? Okay, it's happening. Mm-hmm. Why is it happening? Mm-hmm. Because that curiosity is what drove you to try different things and to keep pushing until you got a satisfactory solution. I think that's one of the messages here that's so important, is that you are worth it. Don't give up.
Yes.
Put yourself in the driver's seat. Even if you feel like you are completely out of control, because I know you do, mm-hmm. you are in the driver's seat no matter how many years of training the so-called experts have. You are the expert in you.
Exactly, Diane. Oh my gosh, that is so powerful. And don't think that, ooh, day one, I felt bad. And day two, now I'm going to work on journaling and do step by step. I had my moments, but I also assigned time to my moments. Like I would physically sit there and went, okay, I need to be angry, depressed, and cry. But you got 60 seconds, girl. Let's go. And I kid you not, by like 50 seconds, and I would time it a lot of times, by 50 seconds in, I would start laughing at myself. I'm like, this is so stupid. But it helped. It was part of what my chiropractor told me. She's like, whenever you're having those thoughts, just say cancel. And it will make you start laughing and it'll redirect your thought pattern. It worked so well for me. It took a while. Again, it wasn't all magic and, you know, fairy dust overnight. But the more I kept like setting that timer for 60 seconds, the less I needed that time to actually just moan and groan and complain and think how this like sucks. It really does. That helped me get through all of this. So don't, it wasn't, again, all rose petals the whole time.
Well, it's such a, actually, the longer I talk to you, the more I realize we have in common. It's just awesome because I do the same thing and mm-hmm. I teach my own clients to do the same thing. And I think the previous version of Stephanie and the previous version of Diane, we grew up very proud at being very responsible, very strong, very in charge. Don't need nothing from nobody. I got it. Everybody depends on me. I don't depend on anyone. I just keep pressing on and soldiering on. But I think what's so great about allowing yourself those 60 seconds is that you're not bypassing your legitimate emotions. Mm-hmm. You're not disregarding your emotions, because I know I did a whole lot of that in the past, and I bet you did too.
Yeah.
Where you just disregard, like, this feeling is illegitimate. This is inappropriate. This is inconvenient. I ain't got no time for this shit. I'm not feeling this.
Yep.
It's literally bypassing your legitimate emotions, which have a way of circling back around and biting you in the ass. Yeah. But you didn't go to the opposite extreme and say, well, I'm just going to have to feel this way. And I'm just, these emotions are just going to have their way with me until they're done. It's like, no, I allow these feelings. I allow all feelings. All feelings are acceptable.
That's
but
good.
There's a time limit. And you're right. Because you set that time limit, you're allowing it. You actually will find over time you don't need it. But there was one more thing that you said that I think is super, super important for us to touch back on. Without naming names, totally unnecessary, or identifying the type of relationships, you realized that setting boundaries with people, saying no to people, renegotiating your relationships with people was also necessary. And I think that is absolutely part of anyone's burnout recovery plan, because most of us are doing too much for too many with very little in return to show for it.
Those conversations were absolute game changers. I'm telling you, physically, I felt the weight of those people coming off me. I'm like, oh, and now if I get into an intense conversation with someone, and then in my mind, I think, oh, my sciatic is kind of bothering me. I'm like, oh, wait, did I just have a conversation that was, okay, let me breathe through this, because I'm not going to allow it to get me back to where I need to be. And I advise that when you have that conversation, don't just think, oh, I just listened to this podcast, I'm going in the room and I'm having this conversation. Like,
we're going to have a throwdown.
Yes, I'm going to kick some butt. I went to a prayer partner about the conversation. I mapped out that conversation, everything that I thought they were going to say back to me. I focused on Stephanie and what Stephanie felt. Not that I didn't care about them, but I couldn't say, and you did this to me and you made me feel blah, blah. No, me. It's about me. Now you get to choose if you're going to accept this and make the changes that I'm asking you to make. So I prepared before I had the conversations.
You are so strategic, my friend.
I try to be because this is hard.
I mean, let's put it this way. Yes, it is a lot of work.
It's work.
However, just like you had to prepare for those conversations with the various physicians and providers, because you're so right. They're on a short leash. They have very little time. And I think many male physicians have been sort of conditioned to see all women as just complainers, right?
Yeah.
So you got to know your shit. You got to be prepared. And you can't just go in and quote unquote advocate for yourself, because that will end up sounding like complaining, maybe even disrespectful, demanding. I've never met a doctor who responds well to that approach. It just feels like, why are you even here? Yeah. You're telling me what to do. I'm the expert. It usually goes south really quickly. But being prepared, whether you're having a conversation with your healthcare provider or a conversation with a family member where you need to set some boundaries and kind of renegotiate some terms, if you're not prepared, you should be prepared for that to go very badly.
Yeah, I 1,000,000% agree. Yeah, and it's was so cool that two of my doctors, my chiropractor and my physical therapist, they had lunch. They sat down and had lunch and talked about me, and both like came up with a plan and came back to me. Like, that does not happen, but it was part of the fact that I was with them like every single week. I became part of their families. So that's part of it. But it was also, I went to every appointment with some strategic questions. And like you said, being respectful of their position as well. So they were willing to engage with me. Even my general practitioner, she rolls her eyes at me sometimes. She's like, okay, let me sit down, because I know you have a bunch of questions. I'm like, yep, I sure do. So I get more time because I walk into that room prepared and being respectful of the situation that I'm in. So I completely think that everyone should, you know, again, come prepared and ask the questions that you need to ask.
Hey, it's Diane. You don't have to be in burnout or even perimenopause to feel like you're working way too hard in your small business. It's not that you aren't attracting clients or making money. You are. It's that you haven't yet figured out how to right-size your business so that it fits your life instead of taking over your life. I help my clients make strategic changes to their small business so they gain more time and energy back, and they learn how to balance profit with passion and purpose. If that sounds like something you could use right now, book a free consult with me. There's a link in the show notes. Let's talk and let's see if I can help you figure this out. Back to the show. What do you think was the hardest part for you about sort of making that decision and then moving into that energy? Because, you know, we both were raised in a way that women who advocated for themselves were bitches. Mm-hmm. And women who took impeccable care of themselves were selfish. Mm-hmm. And we didn't want to be, we were going to distance ourselves from all of that. And inevitably, you reach a point where you're like, you know what? My mental and physical health are suffering. My work performance is suffering. This is having an impact that's rippling through my family, because I'm sure your husband and son were not having a good time with you during this period of time. How did you change your relationship to the word selfish? Because I think every woman needs to do this at some point, and it's kind of difficult.
Yeah. So I had to recognize what was going on in order, and then realize that self-care was the only way to get me out of it. So two of my sons thought I was dying from cancer and just not telling them. The youngest son was handling it well, but I could just tell it was weighing on him. And my husband is a big, huge, 250, strong, muscular built person with a big teddy bear heart. So it was weighing on him and my parents as well. So I was seeing the hurt around me. I was seeing that I wasn't being able to be active, and I was seeing the demise of an organization that I had started on my own. So I was at a point where I'm like, okay, I need to figure this out. And self-care kept coming back. So eating properly is self-care. Journaling Yes. is self-care. Going out in the sunshine is self-care. Saying no to, I was on so many different community boards and so forth, saying no to those boards, not working 10 hours a day at a job is self-care. So I had to think of self-care differently, and then start to think, what does that really mean to me? And for me, I'm totally different than other people. I can sit in a room with a book for like, you know, 3 days and not see anyone. They're like, are you an introvert? I'm like, I really am. I'm just a covert introvert. So again, the hardship, that I just didn't want that for my family. I didn't want the looks in their eyes that I was seeing. And I also just didn't, I felt horrible. I didn't want to feel like that. I didn't want to not be able to, you know, carry laundry upstairs or not be able to move. I didn't want to be in a situation where I couldn't think clearly or I was stressed out all of the time. So I just made that decision. I had to hit rock bottom, to be honest, to make that decision to implement self-care. And so that's what I don't want anyone else to have to do.
Yes, as I'm listening to all of this, I'm thinking how many women would actually be able to deal with all of that and still really be mindful of other people. Like you, you're very strong, you're very driven, you're very determined. And I think we can agree that it was a blessing in disguise for you to have such severe symptoms, because if your symptoms had been more moderate, I somewhat doubt you would have made all these incredible life-changing transformations in the way you show up and take care of yourself in the world.
You are so right. That was part of it as well. It was always like pain and the purpose. Okay, I have a relationship with the Lord. So I prayed, I meditated, I read scripture, I worshiped. I was pouring my heart out so that I could understand what this was. But from the beginning, when it started to get rough, I'm like, okay, there is a purpose to this pain. I know I have to go through this, but it's so I can understand how better I can have a better body in order for me to serve others better. And so the more I kept thinking about that, all right, I can't drive right now. I'm sitting at home. So what should I be doing? Oh, I should be studying so I can educate people. I always kind of think, and again, it wasn't as easy as I may be making it sound now, but I was purposeful in my thoughts so that I could try to get to that easier side of it. Yeah, you're absolutely right. That I knew there was purpose in all of this, and I'm living through. I'm like, oh my gosh, it's just crazy how relationships are different. The way I think is different. The way I react is when I get a pain, how I can like think through and breathe through the pain. I'm like, this is cool, but it didn't happen overnight. It took years of practice, and it took me, again, hitting rock bottom in order to see that I don't like being here. I don't like being down and can't move around and, you know, making everyone else feel, I don't like people taking care of me. So let's get to the bottom of it.
I'm getting the message loud and clear, my friend. And I also think, because we haven't yet touched on a couple of things that I think need to be part of this conversation. One is how going through this hormonal disruption of perimenopause, how did it change? Because you started implementing things while you were in perimenopause. Mm-hmm. And so because of that, like, how was your actual menopause experience?
Mm-hmm. The menopause is one day. Period. It's the day of the 1 year of when your cycle ends. So leading up to all of that, my postmenopausal experience has been great. Well, not, it hasn't been all, you know, roses either, but I know how to control different symptoms. So hot flashes, I know tropical fruit, kombucha, excessive sugar, or those all trigger hot flashes and sleepless nights for me. So what it did was help me understand my body and help me understand what it's going to make my hormones not be happy. Different stressors. Now I'm like, oh, that is kind of stressful. Where before I would have been like in suck it up mode and keep moving. Mm-hmm. That is kind of stressful. Let me back off. So it has been of great impact to my postmenopausal health. I'll be transparent. And I'm having, so last July, my hair started falling out on the left side again. I'm like, the world. So let me figure all of this out. So I just started, you know, I'm a pescatarian, but most of the time vegetarian. So I just had to, again, now I know I'm able to catch it faster. So I had to start on some additional supplementation, making sure I was getting my biotin and making sure my B12 levels. The perimenopause helped educate me enough so that I can now live a happier life during postmenopause. Not perfect, but a much happier, resolved life with a lot less symptoms. I even, so I host at our church. And so I have to probably memorize like 5 to 7 minutes worth of script. I'm like, oh, I memorized script. I didn't have brain fog. Like, I'm all excited about that. So again, I think that the end is a much better than the beginning. That's why I always tell women, like, it's good after 50. People are like, oh, I'm almost 55 or 60. I'm like, no, if you do what you need to do, you take care of your mind, your body, your spirit, it's good when we get older. There's wisdom.
That's absolutely been my experience. And I think that, you know, there are a couple little technicalities here that I think are important that we double down on. One is perimenopause can start as early as your late 30s and last as long as a decade.
Yes.
And menopause, or what our mother's generation used to call the change or the change of life, it is a day that is 1 year after your last period. However, if you think about it, and I'm sure you've thought about it a lot, we spend as much, if we have a normal lifetime, if we have a typical lifespan, we are literally going to spend as much of our life postmenopausal as when we're menstruating. The number of years that we are going to be going through all of the hormonal changes is going to be equal to how much of our life will be spent postmenopause. So there is a expansive transition that takes place in the middle, where we literally go from one kind of person to another kind of person. And I always say it's quite perverse that women in Western culture, as they age, tend to be diminished, discarded, denied, you know, ignored, made invisible, whereas the older women in more tribal cultures, historically and now all around the world, these are the most important people in the community because of their wisdom and life experience. So I just think we've got it all wrong here in the West.
We have it so wrong. My son is marrying a woman from Sierra Leone, and her grandmother is living with them now in Ohio. And to see that level of respect, and she is the queen of the house, and not in a domineering type of way. It's just in a matter of respect and love, where a lot of people are like, oh, we can't have grandma living with us. We need our privacy. They're like, no, stay with us. Like, the kids are like fighting to
keep fighting over her.
Yes. And we have that all wrong. I'm happy you just said that. We do have it all wrong.
Yeah, absolutely. One other thing I was thinking about is that you were running a company when you were going through this, and you're running a company now. It's not the same company, is it?
Mm-mm, not at all. So I was doing education. What was I doing? I was hurting cats is what I was doing. So I was helping, and I paused because I'm like, oh, never mind. I'll tell you this off camera. But anyway, so I was connecting preschool to post-secondary education folks. So when kids transition, even in the same school system, they don't talk. So middle school to high school, like, they don't even know what's going on in the next school building. Mm-hmm. So I was helping them navigate that, and then helping with data on the side. Now I am helping midlife women who want to navigate the change. So I still call it the change because I think that's key. So yeah. So if women are struggling with any of the symptoms that we discussed today, I help them by helping them with their nutrition. And I do that by getting down to the DNA. So I work with a naturopath, and we do some hair tissue mineral analysis, see what's going on, and then help them navigate what's going on in as it relates to perimenopause. And then I have the podcast as well,
which we have to name. It's very clever.
Yes, it's Hello Hot Flash.
I love that so much. And I think, you know, that's the one symptom that, even if you know very little to nothing about menopause or perimenopause, you've certainly heard of a hot flash. And if you're listening to this, you've probably experienced at least one. And it really rocks your world because it's like, well, this is different.
Yeah.
But everything that you've been talking about, Stephanie, how, because you are a critical thinker and a curious person, how you get to the root cause of things, your own rocky perimenopause and everything that you needed to go through personally to experience this transformation and all the learning that came with it, literally led you into a completely new role of service to other women, because there isn't a lot of really good information in the medical world. And a lot of women will just take the prescription for the antidepressant, continue to gain weight, continue to feel irritable, continue to have all kinds of inexplicable physical, emotional, mental, spiritual symptoms, and just think, well, I guess I'm just getting old. Mm-hmm. I guess I'm losing my marbles. I've had some women ask, you know, how do I know if it's perimenopause or early onset Alzheimer's? Because the impact on the brain can be so troubling. And you know that a lot of the people I work with have ADHD. Mm-hmm. And something I've learned about that, because I do as well, is that the influence of hormone production, specifically estrogen, has a big impact on dopamine. And dopamine is the hormone that has difficulty being regulated with ADHD. So I'm seeing a huge percentage of women who never considered that they might have ADHD being diagnosed in their 40s and 50s because perimenopause or menopause unbalanced them to the point where they're like, I seriously need to find out what's going on. So I think these two things kind of go hand in hand, perimenopause and like late diagnosed ADHD. I'm seeing a ton of that.
I agree. Cornell just did a study in October of 23, and there's a relationship between menopause and dementia as well. So again, going back to the brain health, it's all interconnected. And when you just said that, I'm like, yeah, I have seen, like, people are now, I don't want to say wearing it as a badge of honor, but like happy that they have a diagnosis so they can learn how to navigate it is probably a better way to say it. And I'm seeing more people saying, okay, I have this. Now I'm going to figure out how to navigate through it. So, yeah.
Yeah, it's a relief. I don't know if it's something that's a badge of honor, but I think it's relief. There's a relief because like you, most women know their bodies really well, even if they tend to deny, ignore, or minimize troubling symptoms.
Yeah.
And when we know that there's a reason behind what we're dealing with, even though we still have to deal with it, even though we still have to manage it, even there's no cure for any of these things, but knowledge, specifically applied knowledge, is powerful because it puts you back in the driver's seat. And I think that's probably the most significant transformation that happens is when we are not feeling like ourselves. We don't know why. We don't know what to do. We feel completely out of control. But with information and with applied practices and strategies, we're back in control. And that, to me, that's everything.